Good morning, United. I have to tell you about Chippy the parakeet, because that poor bird, he just never saw it coming. Poor Chippy, one second he was on his perch, just sitting in his cage, minding his own business. The next, he was sucked in, washed up, and blown out. The problems really began when his owner, Claire, decided it was time to clean Chippy's cage. And everyone knows the best way to clean a bird cage is with a vacuum cleaner. And so she removed the end from the hose there, stuck it in the cage, and started cleaning up. And then things took a turn for the worse when the phone rang. She picked it up. She barely had time to say hello. And that's when it happened. Chippy got sucked in. Claire was shocked. She threw down the phone. Quick, she turned off the vacuum. She opened the bag, and there he was, Chippy the parakeet. Still alive, but stunned, to say the least. And I'd like to say that was the worst of it. But that poor little guy was just covered in dirt, and she felt terrible. So she grabbed him and raced to the bathroom, and she held Chippy under the cold, running water to get him cleaned off. It took a few minutes for Claire to realize that Chippy wasn't built for baths. And that weird sensation in her hands, that was her beloved bird shivering uncontrollably. So Claire did what any thoughtful, compassionate bird owner would do and reached for the hairdryer. Poor Chippy, he never knew what hit him. Someone asked Claire, "How's Chippy recovering?" She said, "Well, Chippy doesn't really sing much anymore. He just kind of sits and stares. Sucked in, washed up, blown over." Man, that's enough to steal the song from anyone. Max Lucado told Chippy's story in his book, In the Eye of the Storm, and he wrote, "Can you relate to Chippy? Most of us can. One minute, you're seated in familiar territory with a song on your lips. Then the pink slip comes. The rejection letter arrives. The doctor calls. The divorce papers are delivered. The check bounces. You're sucked into a black cavern of doubts, doused with the cold water of reality, stung with the hot air of empty promises. The life that had been so calm is now so stormy. And somewhere in the trauma, you lose your joy. Somewhere in the storm, you lose your song." Have you ever lost your song before? Have you ever felt dryness, coldness on the inside? Like your joy and passion, they were just dead. Have you ever felt like your song was gone? Well, today's for you. Whether your joy and passion's ever been stolen, maybe you gave it away, maybe life beat it out of you. If the song in your heart has ever died, it is time. It's time for a new song. What if I told you God could give your heart a new song? Even if you think he's the reason your joy is gone, even if you think God's the reason why my heart can't sing anymore, would you be willing to consider, would you just be open to the possibility that God has a new song for you? Just consider it. Just give that idea some room to breathe while we talk today. I'm glad to be with you guys today. I'm Adam. I'm on staff over at CCC, and we are huge fans of Tim and you all here at United. Tim and I got the chance to work together at CCC while he was getting ready to lead the charge here. And I know quite a few of the folks from CCC. It's good to see you guys, by the way. I know you felt God challenging you to be part of this new, exciting work he was doing, and you stepped up to the plate to make the dream of this place, this church, a reality. And I haven't gotten to meet everyone that's here, but the church I'm a part of has been praying for you guys. We've made sacrifices for you. We've given and supported you because we believe in you. We believe in what God is up to around here and what he has in store for you. And we are so excited to watch you pursue God and live out his calling on your lives. And I just want to encourage you to keep up the great work because it is worth it. You're off to a fantastic start as an 8-month-old church. And let me tell you are lucky because Tim is a good one. Tim and Maria, they are the real deal, and I hope you know how blessed United is that they're here. I've heard so much about you all and what you've been up to, and I've been wanting to come visit, but it's been hard for me to get away since I have a gig on Sundays and all, but I've really been looking forward to our time together today because of what we're talking about, because I want you to have a new song. Many of us, we need a new song. So listen to how the Bible talks about this in Psalm 40. There's Bibles on the back table if you ever need one. And like Tim said, Psalm 40 is on page 260. Here's what it says. I waited patiently for the Lord to help me, and he turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. You know, one of the benefits of reading the Psalms is they show us patterns of life that people have experienced and gone through in every era. And that's one of the reasons we're spending time looking at this One Hit Wonder series. One of the things I find encouraging about Psalms is that in many respects, these great heroes of the faith, the people we read about in the Bible, the people who wrote down their experiences with God, they're really no different than we are. We're made of the same stuff as them. They weren't superhumans. And man, that's encouraging because we can learn a ton from them. What they went through, that can really give us some guidance, and man, we need it. We don't have to be people who learn everything the hard way. You know, this psalm we're exploring today, Psalm 40, it was written by David, and I'm sure you've heard of him. He's the David from the David and Goliath story, same guy. And I think he's giving voice to how we lose our song and how we can get it back again. David shows us a powerful progression that can help us when our song is gone. And I want you to remember the first word of that progression, and that word is pit. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. Before he's two verses in, David's talking about some dire circumstances. He's painting a word picture. This book of Psalms is a book of poetry, and he's describing what it's like to be helpless. That phrase, pit of despair, it sometimes translates pit of destruction. In other words, this place was so bad, I thought it was leading to my death. I thought what I was going through was going to kill me. He says, I was bogged down in the mud and the mire. I want you to imagine it this way. Picture a well, only at the bottom of the well, there's not much water, just a lot of sludge. If you were in this well, you'd be trapped. No way of getting yourself out. You know, that actually happened to a guy named Jeremiah in the Bible. He was driving the king crazy. So King Zedekiah, he did this to Jeremiah as punishment. So they took Jeremiah and cast him into the cistern, letting Jeremiah down by the ropes. There was no water in the cistern, but only mire. And Jeremiah sank in the mire. It's muddy, boggy, swampy, but it didn't work. The king threw him in, but he did not realize Jeremiah was a bullfrog. And he was a friend of mine, so be nice to him. The point is, this was a punishment. They're using muck and mire as torture. Because if someone didn't sink in completely and suffocate, they'd starve. Without help, you'd be toast. David's describing one of the low points in his life, and he's saying, this is how I feel. This is what my life is like. Now, we don't know the specific pit he was in, but we can look at some of the low points in his life and speculate. He could be writing about what it was like when the king of Israel drove him out of the palace and tried to kill him. He could have been writing about when his son Absalom tried to have him assassinated, his own son. Maybe David wrote this when he had an affair. Maybe this was about when his infant child died. We don't know for sure, but there were certainly ample opportunities for despair. There was plenty of mire, plenty of feeling helpless. David wasn't absent from that in his life. You know, one thing to think about, sometimes those situations, some of those things that cause so much destruction and pain, some of them David brought on himself. Sometimes it's our fault. Sometimes we do it to ourselves. We're our own worst enemy. Sometimes we end up in the pit because we jumped in. And sometimes it's not our fault at all. It's not about consequences. It's not about bad choices. Sometimes we're poor Chippy, just sitting on our perch, minding your own business, and somebody else knocks us in. Either way, the result's the same. We end up in the mud and the mire. This is just how life is, isn't it? You and I, we live in a muddy world. We all spend time in the muck. We all feel hopeless at some point. Like we're living in a pit of destruction, like we're never gonna get out of this. At some point, we all feel like we can't do it, like we're not gonna make it through. We all experience that. You know, anything that causes a sense of helplessness and desperation, that's life in the pit. I think it sounds a lot like the world we know. It's a muddy world full of unfulfilled longing. How long is it gonna be like this? You know, the band U2, they took these words from David and they wrote the song 40. I think that song captures this sense of how much more? How long to sing this song? That's what they sing over and over. How long do I have to do this? How long am I going to have to wait? How long is it going to be like this? You know, maybe you're at the breaking point. You have so many responsibilities. You feel like you're going to drown. That can be true for the overworked. It can also be true if you're hearing the constant cries of your kids all day. It can be the college student who feels the impossible expectations. It can be the person facing the grinding stress of a lingering illness. It can be someone who feels like they're under attack at every turn, spiritually, relationally, emotionally. It makes me wonder, when you're in the pit, who do you cry to? When you're in the pit, there's not much you can do. I mean, we can cling to pride and try to fool ourselves into thinking we can work our way out of it. Or we can look to God, and He specializes in reaching into the pits. I think it's one of the reasons God calls David a man after his own heart, is because David was never afraid to cry out to God. So much of the Psalms are David's unfiltered, vulnerable cries to God. I am weary with mourning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with weeping. When you and I are in the pit, I think we should follow David's example and simply cry out to God, unfiltered, raw, honest, whether it's broken promises, a rebellious child, an unfulfilled ache, cry out to God. But we need to make sure our cry is to God and for God. Notice what David says. Oh, the joys of those who trust the Lord, who have no confidence in the proud or in those who worship idols. When David was under stress, he could have done any number of things. He could have spent his best energies trying to take matters entirely into his own hands. But David cried out for God's help, for God's leading. You know, sometimes we're willing to admit we need help, but we'll look for it anywhere but from God. There was a king of Israel named Asa, and he refused to rely on God. Instead, he did everything he could to handle things on his own terms. Look how the Bible describes him at the end of his life. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and his disease became severe. Yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord. Instead, the Bible says he put all his hope in the people treating his illness, and he was let down. The point here is not that doctors are bad. It's not saying that at all. The point is seeking God first is what's important. David writes, it's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It's better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. Another place he writes, do not put your trust in princes and mortal men who cannot save. When their spirit departs, they return to the ground. On that very day, their plans come to nothing. Blessed is he whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord his God, the maker of heaven and earth, the sea, and everything in them, the Lord who remains faithful forever. When we're in the pit, when we've lost our song, we've got to cry out. But we don't just cry out to anybody. We cry to God, and here's why. Because at the end of the day, God's the only one who can rescue us. He's the only one who has what it takes to get us out of the muck. It's what God does. He specializes in lifting people out of the pits. He's an expert at saving us and restoring us and giving us a new song. It's the very nature of who he is, and it's what he does. And God is really good at it. Plus, he really cares about you. In one psalm, David writes, "You have kept count of my tossings, put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book?" It's a rhetorical question. Of course they are. God sees our sorrow. God sees our hurt, and he wants us to call on him, to cry out for him. That's why Peter encouraged the church when he wrote, "Cast all your anxiety upon him because he cares for you." God cares and wants us to come to him for help. He is for us. He wants to rescue us. Which raises the question, if God cares for me so much, if he loves me like the Bible insists, then why in the world would he let me suffer? That is the question, isn't it? We could talk about that for days, but let me suggest one idea on this. I think we have a different perspective on things than God does. And unfortunately, it's really easy to elevate our perspective and treat it like it is the perspective. I think part of the reason God allows some trouble in our lives is so we can know what it means to fully rely on him and experience his love. From our perspective, it's all about the trouble and wanting God to help us out. And we can live our lives fully focused on pit avoidance, but that is no life. That's a life sentenced to stress and anxiety and fear. But nonetheless, our perspective is usually consumed by pit avoidance. God's perspective is different. He's willing to let us struggle because he knows our pain has a way of turning our hearts back towards him. And that's worth it because at the end of the day, our lives are not fulfilled. They are not made whole by avoiding trouble. We're made whole and fulfilled by experiencing God's presence, experiencing the divine deeply connected to the heart and presence of God is our prize. And when you get that, when that becomes your normal, it completely changes how you see the troubles you've been walking through. As much as it breaks God's heart to see us suffer, he'll allow it because it can draw us deeper into the very source of life, himself. God cares for you. He loves you. He hurts when you hurt. He's concerned for you so much that he's willing to let you come to him because that's the only way he can rescue you. I think one of the most powerful parts of this psalm is when David writes, "I waited patiently for the Lord to help me, and he turned and heard my cry." Just consider this reality for a minute. God hears your cries and turns. The creator of the universe, the Lord God Almighty, the one who is before all things and in all things, the creator and sustainer of life itself, is so dialed into you, he hears and sees when you cry out to him. And when you cry out, the all-powerful King of Kings turns and hears you. God hears your cries. God comes near. God leans in. And you can trust the God that leans in. You can hope in a God that leans in. And you can wait on a God that leans in. And that's probably the hardest part of this whole process, waiting. When we're in the pit, we cry out to God, and then we wait. I waited patiently for the Lord to help me. Or more literally, I waited intently for the Lord, because sometimes God's help seems long in coming. You know, I think we have the first two steps of this process down pretty well. We know how to get into trouble, and we know how to cry out. But waiting, that's tough, isn't it? Wouldn't we prefer God to just answer us immediately? That's the kind of culture we live in. Everything is based on speed. We can't actually be expected to park our cars and walk into a bank or walk into a Starbucks. There had better be a drive-through. Now, all that changes magically as soon as you get a Fitbit, because then you're willing to park like a mile and a half away so you can get your steps, because apparently that's like a thing. You know, when we hit a bump in the road of life when we cry out to God, sometimes we can expect God to be our personal bellhop. Just drop what he's doing, snap to, come running to us straight away. And when he doesn't respond that way, we don't really know what to do with the silence, do we? You pray for a raise at work, but the boss says, there's been some cutbacks. We're going to have to downsize. Your job's affected. You ask God to bless your family and their health, but then a person you love has a suspicious spot on an x-ray, and the tests reveal it's malignant, and you pray for help, and there is no immediate answer. You've got a decision to make. It's a big one. It's going to have long-term implications on you and your family. And deep down, you want to live in line with God's will. You want him to guide you. You call out to him. But there's just silence. When that happens, I think uncertainty starts to take root. You can start to think, is anybody up there? I mean, what happens when God seems slow? It's a hard thing when God is silent. You know, there's a guy, Elijah, in the Bible. And one time, this pillar of devotion and faithfulness to God, he found himself in the pits. And instead of doing what God asked him to do, he got scared and just ran away to the middle of nowhere. And God said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now, I've never heard God's audible voice before. I don't know anyone who has. But can you imagine God speaks to you? And when he does, he calls you on the carpet. What are you doing here? What do you even say to that? Well, listen to what happens. God used an illustration to teach Elijah something, and I think he wants to teach us something too. God tells him to go stand on a nearby mountain because he's going to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Elijah was in the pit. His song was dead. He was terrified for his life. And in all the noise of all the events and everything going on, he lost sight. He lost his faith, his confidence. You know, the big stuff, the big events, that's when you think God would speak. But we can't hear God in the wind. God speaks in the quiet when he has our attention, in the silence. And sometimes we need the silence more than anything else. Some of us might feel like our world is falling apart. We wonder, why won't God answer me? You keep waiting patiently. And you do so rightly, because waiting for the Lord is no waste of your hope. Waiting for the Lord is a life well spent. And now, Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in thee. Those who wait like David, they strain toward the moment when God turns. Their hope is in him, that he is the God who turns and sees and rescues. God doesn't rescue us because we deserve it. God rescues because it's who he is. And when will he come? At the right time. And that is all we can know. And it is not what we want to hear. But it's true. And it's enough. Keep waiting. Don't give up. Don't lose heart. God sees you. He hears you. You can keep going, because there is a moment on the horizon, and sometimes it's hard to tell. It's hard to see coming, but there is a moment coming when things will start to shift. And keep going, because your moment could be right around the corner. You'll almost be able to sense God helping you get your feet underneath you again. All of a sudden, that feeling of desperation, it starts being replaced with a feeling of security. You see, it's not that we forgot God in the pit. What happens is our sense of his presence and of his comfort, it's diminished. The essence of the rescue is the restoration of our ability to sense God's presence and his help and his comfort. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. God is really good at taking people out of the mud and helping them stand on solid ground, setting people on the rock. I learned about that moment when everything changes and God starts lifting you out of the pit in a police station in Mexico. Did you know that there's a law in Mexico that if you cause a car accident and someone gets hurt, you go to jail for as long as they're in the hospital? A few years ago, I led a service trip to Mexico, and our main hub, our campsite, was at a church. It was right off the main road, and we had about 80 people with us. So we had in the morning, we'd get rolling with a caravan of about 15 minivans. And one day, we're pulling out into the right-hand lane, and this guy comes flying down the road in the left lane, and he loses control as he passes us, and he wrecked. And they called the police, and they blamed one of our drivers for the accident, one of my volunteers, Gail. We had to go to the police station. They brought the driver of the other car in, and then they took Gail back. They were going to interrogate them to see whose fault this really was. And Gail doesn't speak Spanish. This was bad news. I think now is a good time to mention and remind everybody that United Student Ministry is always looking for volunteers. And it is a great way to serve because you just never know what's going to happen when you work with students. As you can imagine, my friend was terrified. If this didn't go well, she could go straight to jail in Mexico. This was serious. We were all praying like crazy, just crying out for God's help. And then in walks the head of the Mexican SWAT team, Victor. And it just so happens we know Victor, because the year before, we'd built a house for his son. He walks right into the interrogation room just as the other driver is starting to tell his story. And he slams his hand on the table and he says, "Diga la verdad, tell the truth." And he puts his hand on Gail's shoulder and everything changes. The difference between the pit and the solid rock is when you feel God's hand on your shoulder. When you're in the middle of the pit and you cry out to God and you wait and you don't think you can make it, and he turns to you and he sees you in that moment, your faith swells. Your heart, it explodes with life. There's a depth to your peace. There's a righteous confidence because you can feel God's hand on your shoulder. That's what the solid ground, that's what the rock feels like. The essence of the rescue is getting that feeling back. Gail got that feeling back. What do you think happened when we walked out of the police station that day? We celebrated. Man, we praised God. There were hugs and tears. It was just joyful, overflowing, not just for Gail, not just for all of us, the whole group. We were grateful. We couldn't help but tell how God had blown away our expectations about his goodness by feeling his hand on our shoulder. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. You know, some people never sing out loud or in their heart, and that's a shame. Some people don't cherish anything deeply enough or feel any sense of gratitude intensely enough to sing. I just wonder if they take all of life for granted instead of seeing it as a gift. And unfortunately, all of us gravitate towards that condition, don't we? I think one of the ways God keeps us awake and snaps us out of that place is by letting us hit the pits, leaving us there a little while, and then bringing us into the fresh air of his grace again. I remember body surfing with my family a few years ago on vacation. We were having a great time when all of a sudden we got rocked by a big wave we didn't see coming. Has that ever happened to you? I sucked in some water. I was rolling along the bottom. I was panicking a little bit. I started fighting to get to the surface. And when I got there, when I broke through, what do you think I did? Do you know any other way to get someone to love the air they take for granted than to not be able to breathe for a little bit and then break through again? That's the kind of love God wants from us. Instead of taking him and his ever-present grace for granted, he wants us to breathe deeply. If he has to, he'll wake us up by hiding himself for a season until we crave him like air. And when he shows himself again, we come up gasping into his presence. When that happens, we'll sing like never before. When our feet hit the rock, nothing will be able to contain our praise for the God who is our deliverer. Isn't it incredible that whenever God rescues us from the pit and he gives us a new song, he's not only concerned with our benefit, but how it can help others. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. What exactly do they see through our pit? What if they see that a follower of God handles the pits in life differently than other people? What if they see someone who doesn't crumble when they suffer? What if they see someone who didn't flinch in their distress, who never lost hope, someone who banked on God to the very end, and who, when God turned and saw them and rescued them, when their heart got their song back, they couldn't help but give God the glory? Would it be any wonder why people would see our pit and put their trust in God? When you're in the pit, cry out to him. Wait patiently. He may be silent, you might not understand, but keep trusting. He will help you get your footing again. He will put you on the solid rock. And in the end, your heart will sing. These words David penned nearly 3,000 years ago, they cut right to what we're going through today. This psalm is for you if you've ever been hurt, if life's ever dealt you a bad hand, if you've ever wrestled through guilt or rejection, loss, if you've experienced some sort of unfulfilled longing, maybe you've prayed and prayed and there's no answer. For some of us, we need to be encouraged. We need help to keep waiting on God. Some of us, we're in the midst of the rescue right now, and for some of us, it is right around the corner. Others of us, we've gotten our song back and we need to sing. We're going to celebrate communion together right now, and we're going to remember that our rescue comes in the person of Jesus and what he did for us when he died on the cross and made us right with God. The servers will pass some trays and there's stacks of cups with bread and juice. And it reminds us that our rescue came because Jesus gave his body and his blood was spilled for us. If this is something you're comfortable with, you're invited to celebrate communion in your own time. This is a chance for us to cry out to God. Let me pray for us and we'll celebrate communion. Let's pray together.